Portland. KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. KABU's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Today, we're going to be talking about the Pride Northwest, Fall into Pride, annual LGBTQIA2S+ Community Resilience Drive. We're here today with Deborah Porta and Ian Morton from Pride Northwest. Welcome to Transpositive.
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having us.
So glad to be here.
Thanks. Let's start with you, Ian. Can you introduce yourself, Ian, and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Ian Morton. My pronouns are he, him, and his. I am the director of programs for Pride Northwest. Moved up to beautiful Pacific Northwest, Portland, right in the middle of the pandemic in June of 2020. And am still as enamored with the city as ever and thrilled to be working with Pride Northwest.
Thank you. And Deborah, could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Deborah Porta, she, they. I'm executive director for Pride Northwest. I am originally from Dallas, Texas, but I've been here since 97. And according to lifelong Oregonians, I've been here long enough to be able to claim residency now. And I've been part of Pride Northwest in one way or another since 2006-07. And still as dedicated as ever and excited about where we're going.
Great, thank you. And I know that we got a press release from you recently announcing a Fall into Pride annual community resilience drive. And so that's what we have you on today to talk about. We may talk about some other stuff, but mostly we're just gonna talk about your resilience drive and what's going on with Pride Northwest. So could one of you please introduce us to what's happening with Pride Northwest this fall and how you're supporting the community?
Sure. You know, our community resilience program, of which the drive is part, really kicked into high gear with the advent of the pandemic. As with other organizations, we pivoted our focus and became really heavily involved in supporting our unhoused and housing insecure community members, whether through the See-Through PO Shelter Project, our fiscal sponsees, and other efforts, and just really got active in utilizing our platform to bring resources together and to access places of decision making. Our first at the time, it was the community impact drive, but our first drive was actually the fall of 2020, that pandemic year. And so this year is our fourth, and really it's focused on the literal gathering of resources, whether it's hand warmers, gloves, hats, coats, shelf stable food, and so on, because we very much recognize that while the pandemic itself may not be front and center, the impact of the pandemic, and especially the economic impact on our community and on everything of the last 4 years and beyond, has really hit our community super hard. And we still have so many folks living outside. We have folks who are completely housing insecure, food insecure, economically disadvantaged, all of those pieces, right? I can use all the words. And so this has just really become an integral part of what we do, especially this time of year, to reach out and utilize our platform to bring resources into our community. And so that's, I'll let Ian talk details of the drive and what we're doing this fall, but that's really where it comes from, is that's the history of Pride. Pride is about lifting up and resourcing and including and bringing visibility to and bringing resource to our community.
Thank you. Ian, can you give us some details about the drive?
Absolutely. And one of the things I think also it bears stating is that we are at this really turbulent intersection right now, where we've got so many folks who are moving to cities like Portland because of our value system, especially our LGBTQ2SIA plus community members who maybe feel like experiencing hostility in other states are coming to cities like Portland, and specifically Portland as a refuge city. And at the same time, we're seeing wild, record-breaking low temperatures, ice storms, and things like that. So this really couldn't come at a better time. And when what we do, we look for in our drive is a mixture of things. First of all, we use our platform to let folks know that we are collecting items, and that could be things like hand warmers, sleeping bags, tents. There are some times where we need to take small heating units to places who have lost heat, especially some of our seniors. So any sort of resources like that are amazing. We also have a fund that is specific to the community resilience drive, which is for immediate emergency housing needs. And that could be, again, one of our community elders who loses power and has no heat and needs to have a couple nights in a hotel. That could be someone who is let go right in the middle of the holiday season and needs to make a rent payment so they can stay in their home. So we really try to have as broad an impact as possible. Our platform is amazing for all of the folks who are so supportive of the work we do during the Pride Festival and parade, but that really gives us an opportunity to connect with the community and give them an opportunity to give back. Any of us who have got something to give, whether it's funds or whether it's donations, we are a great place to put that, and we will do our very best to make sure it gets out to folks who are in need.
Great. I saw that you all, that Pride Northwest is going to be included in the Give Guide this year in the Willamette Weekly. You want to talk about that?
Sure. We're super excited about that. We haven't been in the guide in a good long time, and it's just a great platform for several things, including obviously visibility about what we're doing, the ability to raise interest in supporting our work, and that's huge. Pride has a tendency to fall off the radar as soon as June and July are gone, and so this is a great opportunity for us to educate and remind the community about the work that we're doing year round. Participating in the Give Guide is also, because of the way that they run the program, it's also a really good opportunity for us to build new relationships and to strengthen existing relationships. For example, we're partnering with Parkinson's Resources of Oregon for the Give Guide, and you know, shared visibility, messaging, this kind of thing, because there's overlap in our communities. Same thing with Rosehaven Women's Center, Hygiene for All, and some others partnering throughout the season, lifting each other up and connecting our work together, hopefully building longer-term relationships that go beyond the Give Guide. And we're already planning what's possible with the Parkinson's Resources folks about engaging in some of their group work and growing resources for queer community members who are participating in their programming, for example. So that's super exciting longer term. But yeah, we're very excited about the guide and the potential of it for sure.
What are some of the ways in which community members or organizations can help?
Well, certainly going to our website, which is pridenw.org, is a great place to start and keep up to date on all of our different opportunities for engaging with this drive. But we have things like an Amazon wish list where people can purchase items. We have direct giving portals. Also, anyone who is able to uplift this information and the drive on social media platforms, we super, super appreciate. And organizations, you can host a collection bin, whether it's in a lobby or an employee break room for specific items that people might want to donate. There are so many ways I think that people can engage and know that their work is going directly to help community members. But our website is definitely a great starter point to sort of see what all the different opportunities look like, from volunteering to giving to again hosting a collection box for us.
So you mentioned that one of the things that you're seeing at Pride is you're seeing people coming here because Portland is a refuge city. It's a place that has a reputation as a safe space for, like, what kind of people specifically are you talking about? Are you talking about all queer people? Are you talking specifically about, like, trans people of color? What kind of communities are coming here, and what are some of the needs that you're hearing about when they come here?
The folks coming are, you know, we're talking really especially people moving out of, and this has been going on for the last 18 months or so, if not longer, really coming from the parts of the country where laws are being enacted or they're attempting to enact anti-LGBTQ laws, regulations, rules, all of these things. They're, you know, our community is being driven out of places, quite honestly. And Portland and Oregon as a whole, because of the legal status that we hold here and the legal support that we have here, has this reputation for being a place to come, which on the one hand is great because, you know, we live here and we get to benefit from it. And at the same time, in terms of resources and the ability for all of our community members to have what they need to thrive, we have a lot of work to do. And so with new people coming, and a lot of the new people story, newcomers, is somewhat anecdotal, based on, you know, organizations seeing new clients, new inquiries coming. I know that I've had several community organizations from other states reach out about connecting community members who are moving here and giving sort of that soft handoff kind of process. I know that in talking with especially Katie over at Equi, they've been on the front line, so to speak, of seeing and interacting and engaging with a lot of new folks to Portland. In talking with her, there's very clear prominence of folks coming from the trans community. That is, I'm not going to be able to point to a number, but in talking to Katie and then also talking to a couple of other folks who are sort of on the front line in terms of clients coming to town, it's, you know, 50% plus members of the trans community, definitely a high percentage of Black queer trans folks coming. So it is lots of, it's the marginalized of the marginalized, as they say. Some people are moving with, you know, a certain amount of resources. They're coming, maybe they've got a place to stay, maybe they've got some resources, maybe even a job. Lots of folks have come here without the resources. They just literally picked up their lives and ran, in all honesty, which is why it's in a place where we already don't have enough available resources to fully serve our community members in need. Those numbers just continue to grow. And so the need continues to grow just in general.
Ian, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, and as that need continues to grow, we recognize that our, you know, our partner and friends at fellow organizations that are on the front lines are overwhelmed. So that's one of the reasons it is so important for Pride to be able to do our part. We really work as an intermediary with a lot of organizations to be able to leverage our platform towards the collection, distribution. Deborah has you know, mentioned a couple of our partners that we work with. Tomorrow, I've actually got someone from Hygiene for All coming to pick up some hygiene and warming kits. So this is an opportunity for us to really be a part of that solution of giving folks the resources that they're going to need to make it through the winter, make it through the holiday season. If they don't, if they're not securely housed, or if they need warming supplies, whatever it is that they need. We really, again, we take the responsibility very seriously to be an active ally to the folks who are on the front lines, meeting these needs, doing the distribution, and having the platform that we do and the reach that we do and the connections that we do. It's really what it's all about. You know, the connections we make with the community, the connections we make with our partners and sponsors, is being able to say, once we get through the Pride season, we're still working, and here are ways that you can help us uplift and support the community 365 days a year.
So recently the Portland City Council had some conversations that were discussed in the media, where they were talking about cutting back on their support for social service programs that help out houseless people, that help out people living on the streets in need, that help out people who are marginally housed and who have really like no resources. It seems especially cruel for the Portland City Council to be discussing this right as we're heading into the rainiest and coldest and most dangerous part of the year to be living on the streets. What are your thoughts about the that conversation, about the potential for new cross collaborations with the upcoming city council, which is going to be a complete new restructuring of the council, and specifically the role that the mayor has in like supporting the nonprofits that are on the front lines doing this important work?
Boy, that's a big conversation right there. You know, I'll start with a little bit of context. One of the areas that Pride Northwest has also become active in is collaborating with and being in coalition with other organizations, queer and otherwise, serving, supporting, and advocating with and for our housing insecure community. Pride Northwest is a founding member of the LGBTQIA2S+ Housing Collaborative here in Portland. And we're also a steering committee member and a member of the Welcome Home Coalition. And through those, both of those efforts, we've been able to be part of meetings, conversations, and this a little bit of, I guess you could call it behind the scenes, which doesn't is not nearly as informative as it sounds, not nearly as sexy as it sounds. And watching the politics, in all honesty, I can hear Ian telling me, be careful now. The politics that is so underpinning the personality politics, I should say, so underpinning a lot of how decisions are being made, especially at the city level. It's disconcerting, it's disappointing, because we see the direct impact on our people and on our community in terms of, you know, people. When I first moved to Portland and began getting involved in community, and I don't mean to minimize this, but there were a handful of people who might pass away on the street, right? And now we're in the hundreds. I think last year was somewhere in the range of 400 people dying outside in the city of Portland because mm-hmm. of being
on
the streets.
All kinds of horrible ways. People dying of hypothermia,
right?
Their tents getting caught on fire. People dying getting shot out in the streets.
Right, people getting dying. Shot at. People are throwing fireworks at people who are sitting in a tent outside. I mean, it's not pretty.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying for people living on the streets.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, this part of the story has been undercut and minimized by you know, the folks who benefit from the status quo, in all honesty, and they've been owning the messaging, the conversation around it. And so we now have a city that is in full fear of walking outside their house, whether they should be in fear or not. And what that's done is very much dehumanize the people who are actually being harmed by decisions that are being made and not made by our policymakers, and the struggles that city leadership, county leadership have had in being able to work together and prioritize resolution of these issues as opposed to political one-upmanship. And I don't tend to get this blunt in public, but it's kind of true. And there are a lot of really good people at the county, at the city, different places who are trying to get things done and trying to overcome this game, in all honesty, that's being played with people's lives. That's just my take in being able to witness and observe these things over the last several years. And I don't think that, you know, you mentioned the change coming in the city council and in the mayor's role.
Hopefully the mayor's role will be reduced in this particular topic.
The mayor's role overall is shifting in terms of city structure. There are some areas where the mayor will retain a fair amount of influence and decision-making power, and then there are other areas where there's more oversight and there's less one person decision making. I want to caution folks to recognize two things. One, changing the city council, changing our form of government isn't going to quote unquote fix everything tomorrow. It's going to take time because this city is, there's a lot of work to do, as we know. These are not quick answers coming. The other half of that is that we as community members have to engage with our council. And I'm not talking about just attending city council meetings and approving or disapproving what's happening. Those pieces are very important. They need to have people in those meetings who know that they're not being approved of if we don't approve. But I also really want to encourage folks to recognize that you need to go and meet whoever it is that comes into office. Find out who they are. I mean, to be doing that now, the election hasn't even happened, but find out who your counselors are. Find out what their powers are. Find out what their priorities are, and make sure they know who you are. And we, you know, and I think, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but just in general, our political environment at the moment has a lot to do with we as a community taking a lot of things for granted and not being engaged and not being part of finding solutions with each other. So that's going to be, it doesn't matter the form of government if we're not doing that. I have high hopes for these changes. I was, you know, in my non-pride world, part of making those changes. And there's some really great people, I think, who are running and bringing their voices in. But it doesn't mean that we can get more comfortable and be less engaged.
The kind of work that you're doing is reflective of the very roots and foundation of what the Pride movement means and how it started. Pride was started by marginally insecure trans women of color who decided to rebel against a system that was pushing them down in every way possible. And they stood up and said that they're not going to take it anymore. And they pushed back. And that pushing back, which is, you know, part of what I think your community resilience drive is about, is about supporting, you know, recognizing where we come from, who we are, and what our responsibilities are to each other.
Oh, absolutely. I think that last piece is key, that, you know, members of our people in our community, it can be really difficult to maintain connection because our identifying on this spectrum of orientation and gender is the thing that makes us a community, right? But everything else about us is still just as different and diverse and periodically contentious as any other community. And it takes a lot of intention on our part, in my opinion, to proactively keep building community and strengthening community and connecting our bonds with each other. And as you say, to take care of each other. Because at the end of, this can sound really corny, at the end of the day, no matter how much progress has been made, and there's been a lot of progress, we know this, but no matter how much progress has been made, we are still not large enough as a community, as a cohesive community, to ensure that those changes will stick. It could, the larger community, the larger society, if they really felt like it, could still completely ignore us and be able to get away with it. We don't have nearly as much power as we think we do, or we haven't, let's put it this way, we haven't claimed as much power as we think we have. We have a long way to go, and the cohesiveness of our community and our power in numbers, which is what Pride is all about, is core to that. Because if we're not active and we're not seen, nobody has to pay attention to us.
Ian, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. First of all, I really appreciate that you brought up community and how we need to continue to lift up and support each other, because that is the broader purpose of the community resilience program. We're focused a lot on the drive right now because that's something tangible that people are able to engage with. But what this work looks like throughout the year is very much rooted in creating opportunities for people to connect with each other. We've got, lots of future looking plans and programs that we're hoping to continue to develop that bring people together outside of the beautiful weekend that is the Pride Festival, where we really get to see what a critical mass of queer folks looks like coming together in one space, but recognizing that work. And to what Deborah was saying, the piece that I often reflect upon and find myself wanting to talk about is there's a mythology of a prosperous queer Portland that I think is out there in the world. And as someone who moved here in 2020, it definitely is something that is outside of our city, where it's not just the idea that Portland is a safe space or a tolerant space for queer folks, but that there's a lot more infrastructure to ensure prosperity when you get there. And that's really a lot of the work that we're doing now. And so many of our organizations have been filling in those gaps where government entities have failed our community and failed our population in having safe, affirming, dignity-ensuring spaces where resources can be procured, where housing can be found. Hearing the individual stories of folks who are choosing to do their best out in the streets, out in the elements, as opposed to seeking housing, it's just heartbreaking. And that's, again, so many of our usually very small teams within our nonprofit organizations are doing our best to quell that tide of need. But without us as a broader community and all of us in the community taking that responsibility to encourage and lean on our elected officials to provide funding, provide support for those spaces, we can't do it alone.
So in addition to the purpose of, we're talking today with Ian Morton and Deborah Porta about the Pride Northwest Fall into Pride community resilience drive. In addition to talking about how people can give, how can people who have needs receive? So if there's people who need housing assistance, who need something to keep them warm, who need food or a connection to programs, how can those people be helped? Do they come and talk to you directly at Pride Northwest? Where do they go to find resources?
So that is, that's a good question. Because it changes a little bit. The best connection for getting into what's available as a resource, I highly encourage reaching out to the Equi Center, definitely. Hygiene for All, Rose Haven. There are a couple of others, but especially if you have an immediate, like, I need a blanket, I need some food, I need some gloves, I need a something, right? Because they're also all partnering with others as well. If someone has a question about, and I want to be realistic about recognizing that at this point, Pride Northwest is utilizing the resources that we have to be as supportive as we can. Our goal is to grow this program in terms of direct support potential. Our focus is more on being a resource and supporting our partners who are doing the quote unquote work on the ground, because Pride Northwest itself isn't a as they say, direct service agency. So, we're still, in all honesty, still developing some of those pieces. The first recommendation would be to reach out to one of the services directly on the ground. If folks have questions about what is possible, they're totally welcome to email me directly, or email info@pridenw.org. And we can definitely have a conversation from there. At this point, I really do want to emphasize that if someone has an immediate, like, I need help right now, definitely reach out to the Equi Institute, Rose Haven, Hygiene for All. Ian, you may have to help me out here with the other recommendations. Black and Beyond the Binary is doing amazing, amazing work.
Yeah, certainly remembering PAIR for youth services, mm-hmm, specifically.
Right. And we're galvanizing is not the right word. We're bringing our resources and our platform together to support all of these organizations on a larger scale, so that they have more of an ability to directly support and assist more people.
Yeah, and also it's worth noting that for folks who do have access to internet, whether it's a smartphone or a laptop or a tablet, we do have a relatively comprehensive list of community resources on our website, and that's also a great place to start the conversation. But if something can't be found there, we absolutely encourage folks to reach out to us via email. And kind of speaking to some of the different ways that we're able to leverage what we collect, both with direct requests from organizations that Deborah has mentioned, we're on Signal chats with community response groups that we've helped with things like blankets and hand warmers and things like that. So we do stay also engaged with folks who are on the ground doing the work. And that's one of the ways that we are able to respond directly to folks who are going out. If they an encampment comes up and they know that there's going to be severe weather, being able to get them supplies ahead of time so that they can take them out there. And I also will say, one of the things that we also take seriously, because we do have a platform that reach so many, is on our social medias, we do try to make sure that folks, we forecast weather events. We try to keep up to date information as far as resources that are available. Also, if we get updates about maybe certain resources being full and not being, not still being an option for folks, transit lines, things like that. Especially the severe weather instances, and Deborah is great at this and I'm learning, we really try to use that platform to keep folks as up to date as possible so that they're able to move with intention towards safety.
Thank you. Again, we're talking with Ian Morton and Deborah Porta from Pride Northwest about the Fall into Pride annual LGBTQIA2S+ community resilience drive. One of the truths about Portland that's really been highlighted in this year's city council race has been that East Portland has been severely neglected. An amazing statistic that I learned this year was that something like 50% of all Portland city councilors ever since the city council started have come from the West Hills. When we look at the allocation of resources and the agencies that are supporting people, we find a lot of those being really focused in the central city. At the same time, we're also seeing Portland Street Response, having limitations on how they can interact and engage to support folks out on the streets. And we're seeing camps, being taken apart, people's personal property being taken from them, people being, shuffled out of places where they're considered quote unquote visible. And a lot of these people are, they're getting pushed out into East Portland. That's where you're seeing, a lot of the RVs, a lot of the RVs for folks who are marginally housed, a lot of the new tent communities, a lot of stuff is being pushed out to the east side. What are you doing to kind of move with where the need is going? Is this something that's registering with Pride Northwest? Are you hearing about this? Are some of the agencies that you work with supporting folks out on the east side?
That's a good question, because that would be a really good question for Molly at Welcome Home Coalition. The Portland's engagement with and support of and all of those words with the east part of the city goes back decades from when it was first annexed. It's not surprising that it's still an issue, because it's always been an issue in terms of resources and allocation and attention paid to the issues on the east side. You are definitely correct in terms of the history of the council and where members tend to come from. I will say I don't want to, how do I put this? I don't necessarily want to give the impression that the West Side is so much better than the East Side.
No.
In some ways,
that was not true, right?
But some people, because this conversation has come up before, the number of folks in need on the West Side continues to grow, and in some ways there are fewer resources because nobody thinks anybody needs anything over there, and we don't want to look bad by having these services. My wife and I personally live in North Portland, but I've engaged with lots of people on the West Side, and the East Side is definitely we cannot ignore the fact that the East Side is definitely very much under-resourced and underheard on many issues. In terms of, people being pushed out there, that's not surprising, because that's happened on multiple levels. Even here in North Portland, my wife and I can always tell when when there's been an uptick in sweeps, which is hugely damaging, but we can always tell when there's been an uptick in sweeps because we see more people here too. Even going in across into Vancouver, which there used to be, like, the river was literally a line where you saw villages and camps and tents and all kinds of things. And you go across the river into Vancouver and you don't see anything. And even that has changed. People are literally being pushed out of the city at this point to the east side, north, et cetera. They're being pushed across the river. It's definitely a thing. And the organizations that we, to this point, have been the most engaged with are small. They're not citywide. They're very sort of location, like Rose Haven has one small location downtown. Hygiene for All is over there under the Burnside Bridge. And this is probably some of the most benefit to being part of something like the Welcome Home Coalition, because that coalition has a range of organizations. Some of them are on the east side. Some of them are in Clackamas County, for example. There are a lot of folks being pushed out to Clackamas County at this point as well. And for us, this is one of the reasons why this, as Ian mentioned, we have taken on this focus of, as an intermediary organization, utilizing our platform to tap into larger resources, to take the onus of that off of some of our partners so that they can focus on being able to expand their own capacity and their own reach. Even something as, you know, what are the supplies that we can access in mass, for example, so that Sandra and their folks over at Hygiene for All aren't having to scrap and scramble and try and find hand warmers. What can they, what else can they do with that resource of their time and their focus? They can expand what they're doing. Rose Haven, even Gather Make Shelter, others, it's the same thing. So this is where Pride Northwest, again, recognizing that we're not a direct service agency and we're not intended to be a direct service agency, what does it mean for what we can actually do with our platform, and where do we lean in at? And that is about scope and visibility and access in ways that small, especially grassroots organizations doing the work on the ground don't tend to have the capacity or the access to do. Where do we utilize our spotlight, our access, and our platform to do that work, to help make their work easier and their work further reaching, if that makes sense.
Thanks for talking today with Ian Morton and Deborah Porta about the Fall into Pride Community Resilience Drive at Pride Northwest. You mentioned in your press release that last year, Pride Northwest, through the Community Resilience Drive, collected and distributed over 3,000 critical need items. What are some of the ways that, Ian, that people, I mean, this is obviously an area of huge need, and I'm sure that in spite of all the work that Pride Northwest did in 23, I bet there's even more need now. What are some of the ways, Ian, that community members, organizations, and individuals can help?
Yeah, you know, as I said, certainly the direct donation piece is huge, because that gives us the flexibility to purchase things that are needed and fill in the gaps for things that we don't collect necessarily through donations. But reaching out to us, a lot of our superpower is that we can be flexible in the way that we do things, and we can be creative in the way that we partner with organizations and individuals. So individuals who want to hold a drive or host some sort of event, some of our drag personalities that have a large following who want to have a collection bin at one of their shows. It can be ways that are either very, very serious and very, you know, heartrending, or it can be ways that are fun and jovial and bring a piece of that to it. But we're committed to the collection and the distribution through the organizations we work with. We actually keep a separate storage room just specifically for collecting these items. So any amount, large or small, is amazingly appreciated. And again, they all, especially whenever the poop hits the fan, making sure that we've got these things available for whether it's pop-up warming shelters or for distribution to encampments, or getting folks out of houses without power, replacing food if someone's power goes out and, you know, they can't afford to replace the food that got ruined because the refrigerator went out. All of those different things are ways that we're able to respond with community help. But we lean into creatively working with individuals, organizations, businesses to figure out like the best way that they can be a part of the solution.
And I saw that also that you're in the Willamette Week Give Guide this year. What does that mean? How does that work?
Yeah, being a part of that this year is super, super exciting. It's an amazing platform because it does have such a large reach. But in addition to folks being able to give direct donations through that portal, there are also things that will be, that people will see pop up. We have Give Big Days where there are incentives. The folks might be able to get like a coupon or something to one of our partner organizations. There will be a couple opportunities for maybe some larger prizes for people who donate. So it's a fun way to be part of a huge initiative across the city, across the metro area, but also demonstrate that the importance and the intention of donating specifically to queer organizations. It's a way for, on this huge platform that raises millions and millions of dollars, for us to be able to show up and show out as community members and say, yes, we are putting our money back into LGBTQ2SIA+ organizations who are supporting folks on the ground. And it gives us also an opportunity to, as Deborah had mentioned earlier, partner with other organizations that and find our intersections and common ground, and also tell the stories of a lot of our community members in a way and to an audience that wouldn't necessarily just by default engage with Pride Northwest.
Great. Well, we've been talking today again with Deborah Porta and Ian Morton with Pride Northwest. Thanks so much for joining us today for Trans Positive. And tell us one more time, like, if people want to find out more about this, if they want to get connected, if they want to get engaged with this drive, how can they do that?
Sure. First of all, of course, the easiest way to find information is to go to our website, which is pridenw.org. For people who want to reach out and have a conversation about what partnering looks like, info@pridenw.org is the best way to go. We check those every day of the week to see what's coming in, and that will put you in touch with either Deborah or myself or one of our other amazing staff members, and we're open to having those conversations about what partnership looks like.
Great. Well, Ian and Deborah, thanks so much again for joining us on Trans Positive, and best of luck to you.
Thanks for having us.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
even walk in my sleep. What's rough around me seems to always creep. Every night and day, I hang my head and weep, yes, and weep. I love my baby, I want it for myself. If he don't be mine, he won't have nobody else. He has left me. I'll do the best I can. I'm a do-right kid in a frenetic place I land. Now I got the don't have news. Can't be satisfied. Every night and day I go to the front door to buy a rocking chair. Blues overtakes me, gonna rock away from here. Now my love has been refused. Now I got the don't care blues.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on